at a line of type framed by snowflakes. "Do you believe in a place called Christmas Land? What would you do for a lifetime pass to a place where every morning is Christmas morning and unhappiness is against the law? Don't give up on wonder. Don't give up on your dreams. We're looking for go-getters who love children and aren't afraid of adventure. Inquire about special opportunities in our security department. This isn't just a job, it's a life. Christmas Land is waiting for you." Bing liked the ads in the back of the pulps. Ads for tin lockers filled with toy soldiers. Recreate the thrill of Verdun. Ads for vintage World War II equipment. Bayonets, rifles, gas masks. Ads for books that would tell you how to make women want you. Teach her to say, "I love you." He often clipped out order forms and sent in pocket change or grimy dollar bills in an attempt to acquire ant farms and metal detectors. He wanted with all his heart to amaze his friends and astonish his relatives. And never mind that his friends were the three Phoebes who worked under him in the janitorial crew at Nor Chem Farm, and that his only direct relatives had returned to the soil in the cemetery behind the New American Faith Tabernacle. Bing had never once considered that his father's collection of softcore pulps, mildewing in a cardboard box down in Bing's quiet room, were older than he was, and that most of the corporations he was sending money to had long since ceased to exist. But his feelings as he read, then reread the advertisement about this place, Christmas Land, were an emotional response of a different order. His uncircumcised and vaguely yeasty-smelling penis went limp in his left hand, forgotten. His soul was a steeple in which all the bells had begun to clash at once. He had no idea where or what Christmas Land was, had never heard of it, and yet he instantly felt he had wanted to go there all his life. To walk its cobblestone streets, stroll beneath its leaning candy cane lampposts, and to watch the children screaming as they were swept around and around on the reindeer carousel. "What would you do for a lifetime pass to a place where every morning is Christmas morning?" the advertisement shouted. Bing had 42 Christmases under his belt. But when he thought of Christmas morning, only one mattered, and that one stood for all the rest. In this memory of Christmas, his mother slid sugar cookies shaped like Christmas trees out of the oven, so the whole house took on their vanilla fragrance. It was years before John Partridge would catch a framing nail in the frontal lobe, and that morning he sat on the floor with Bing, watching intently as Bing tore open his gifts. Bing remembered the last present best, a large box that contained a big rubber gas mask and a dented helmet, rust showing where the paint was chipped away. "You're looking at the gear that kept me alive in Korea," his father said. "It's yours now. That gas mask you're holding? There's three yellow men in the dirt. That's the last thing they ever saw." Bing pulled the gas mask on and stared out through the clear plastic lenses at his father. With the gas mask on, he saw the living room as a little world trapped inside a gumball machine. His father set the helmet on top of Bing's noggin, then saluted. Bing solemnly saluted back. "So you're the one," his father said to him. "The little soldier that all the men are talking about. Mr. Unstoppable. Private take no shit. Is that right?" "Private take no shit, reporting for duty, sir. Yes, sir," Bing said. His mother laughed her brittle, nervous laughter and said, "John, your language on Christmas morning, it isn't right. This is the day we welcome our Savior to the earth." "Mothers," John Partridge said to his son, after Bing's mother had left them with sugar cookies and gone back to the kitchen for cocoa. "They'll keep you sucking at the tit your whole life if you let them. Of course, when you think about it, what's wrong with that?" And winked. And outside, The snow came down in big goose feather flakes, and they stayed home together all day. And Bing wore his helmet and gas mask and played war, and he shot his father over and over. And John Partridge died again and again, falling out of his easy chair in front of the TV. Once Bing killed his mother, too, and she obediently crossed her eyes and went boneless and stayed dead for most of a commercial break. She didn't wake up until he removed his gas mask to kiss her forehead. Then she smiled and said, "God bless you, little Bing Partridge. I love you more than anything." What would he do to feel like that every day? To feel like it was Christmas morning and there was a real Korean War gas mask waiting for him under the tree. To see his mother slowly open her eyes once again and say, "I love you more than anything." The question really was, what would he not do? He shuffled 3 steps toward the door before he got around to yanking his pants back up. His mother had taken on some secretarial chores for the church after her husband couldn't work anymore, and her Olivetti electric typewriter was still in the closet in the hall. The O was gone, but he knew he could use the number 0 to cover for it. Bing rolled a sheet of paper in and began to write. "Dear respected Christmasland owners, I am responding to your ad in Spicy Menace magazine. Would I like to work in Christmasland? You bet! I have 18 years of employment at Norchem Farm in Sugar Creek, Pennsylvania, and for 12 I have been a floor manager for the custodial team. My duties include the care and shipping of many compressed gases, such as oxygen, hydrogen, helium, and sevoflurane. Guess how many accidents on my watch? None! What would I do to have Christmas every day? Who do I have to kill? Ha ha ha! There is no nasty job I have not done for Norchem Farm. I have cleaned toilets packed full and flowing over with you-know-what, mopped pee-pee off walls and poison rats by the dirty dozen. Are you looking for someone who isn't afraid to get his hands dirty? Well, your search is over. I am just the man you are looking for. A go-getter who loves children and who isn't afraid of adventure. I do not want much except a good place to work. A security job would suit me fine. To be straight with you, once upon a time I hoped to serve my proud nation in uniform, like my dad did in the Korean War. But some youthful indiscretions and a bit of sad family trouble prevented me. Oh well, no complaints. Believe me, if I could wear the uniform of Christmasland security, I would consider it just as honorable. I am a collector of authentic military memorabilia. I have my own gun, and I know how to use it. In closing, I hope you will contact me at the below address. I am loyal to a fault and would die for this special opportunity. There is nothing I am not ready to do to earn a place among the Christmasland staff. Season's greetings, Bing Partridge. Bing Partridge, 25 Block Lane, Sugar Creek, Pennsylvania, 16323. He rolled the sheet out of the typewriter and read it over, lips moving. The effort of concentration had left his lumpy, potato-shaped body humid with sweat. It seemed to him that he had stated the facts about himself with clarity and authority. He worried that it was a mistake to mention youthful indiscretions or sad family trouble, but in the end decided they would probably find out about his parents whether he said anything or not, and that it was better to be coolly upfront about it than look like he was hiding something. It was all a long time ago, and in the years since he had been released from the youth center, a.k.a. the bin, he had been a model worker, had not missed a single day at Norchem Farm. He folded the letter, then looked in the front closet for an envelope. He found instead a box of unused Christmas cards. A boy and a girl in fuzzy long underwear were peeking around a corner, staring in wide-eyed wonder at Santa Claus, standing in the gloom before their Christmas tree. The seat of the girl's pajamas was partly unbuttoned to show one plump cheek of her ass. John Partridge had sometimes said that Bing couldn't pour water out of a boot with instructions written on the heel, and maybe it was true, but he still knew a good thing when he saw it. This letter was slipped into a Christmas card, and the card into an envelope decorated with holly leaves and shiny cranberries. Before he put it into the mailbox at the end of the street, he kissed it, as a priest might bend his head and kiss the Bible. The next day he was waiting by the mailbox at 2:30 when the mailman proceeded up the street in his funny little white truck. The foil flowers in Bing's front yard spun lazily, making a barely audible whir. "Bing," the mailman said, "aren't you supposed to be at work?" "Night shift," Bing said. "Is a war starting?" the mailman said, nodding at Bing's clothes. Bing had on his mustard-colored fatigues, what he wore when he wanted to feel lucky. "If there is, I'll be ready for it," Bing told him. There was nothing from Christmas Land. But of course, how could there be? He had only sent his card the day before. There was nothing the next day, either. Or the day after. On Monday, he was sure something would come and was out on his front step a half hour before the postman's usual time. Black and ugly thunderheads towered over the crest of the hill, behind the steeple of the New American Faith Tabernacle. Muffled thunder detonated 2 miles away and 18,000 feet up. It was not a noise so much as a vibration, one that went to Bing's core, that shook his bones in their sediment of fat. His foil flower spun hysterically, sounding for all the world like a pack of kids on bicycles, racing downhill and out of control. The rumbles and crashes made Bing profoundly uneasy. It had been unbearably hot and thundery the day the nail gun went off. That was how he thought of it. Not as the day he shot his father, but as the day the gun went off. His father had felt the barrel pressing against his left temple and looked sidelong at Bing, standing over him. He took a sip of his beer and smacked his lips and said, "I'd be scared if I thought you had the balls." After he pulled the trigger, Bing sat with the old man and listened to the rain rattle off the roof of the garage, while John Partridge sprawled on the floor, one foot twitching and a urine stain spreading across the front of his pants. Bing had sat until his mother entered the garage and began to scream. Then it had been her turn, although not for the nail gun. Now Bing stood in his yard and watched the clouds mount up in the sky over the church at the top of the hill, where his mother had worked all the last days of her life. The church he had attended faithfully every Sunday, since before he could even walk or speak. One of his first words had been, "Luya," which was the closest he could come to pronouncing, "Hallelujah." His mother had called him Luya for years after. No one worshipped there now. Pastor Mitchell had run off with the funds and a married woman, and the property had been seized by the bank. On Sunday mornings, the only penitents in the New American Faith Tabernacle were the pigeons that lived in the rafters. The place frightened Bing a little now. Its emptiness frightened him. He imagined that it despised him for abandoning it and abandoning God, that sometimes it leaned forward off its foundations to glare at him with its stained glass eyes. There were days like this, when the woods were full of the lunatic shrilling of summer insects, and the air wobbled with liquid heat, and that church seemed to loom. Thunder hammered at the afternoon. "Rain, rain, go away," Bing whispered to himself. "Come again some other day." The first warm drop of rain spattered against his forehead. Other drops followed, burning bright in the sunshine that slanted in from the yawning blue sky to the west. It felt almost as hot as a spray of blood. The mail was late, and by the time it came, Bing was soaking wet and huddling under the shingle overhang at his front door. He ran through the downpour for the box. As he reached it, a twig of lightning stroked out of the clouds and fell with a crash somewhere behind the church. Bing shrieked as the world flashed blue-white-blue. Sure he was about to be lanced through, was about to burn alive, touched by the finger of God for giving his father the nail gun, and for what he had done afterward to his mother on the kitchen floor. There was a bill from the utility company, and a flyer announcing a new mattress store, and nothing else. 9 hours later, Bing came awake in his bed to the tremulous sound of violins, and then a man singing in a voice as smooth and creamy as vanilla cake frosting. It was his namesake, Bing Crosby. Mr. Crosby was dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones he used to know. Bing pulled the blankets close to his chin, listening intently. Mingled with the song was the gentle scratch of a needle on vinyl. He slid out of his bed and crept to the door. The floor was cold under his bare feet. Bing's parents were dancing in the living room. His father had his back to him and was dressed in his mustard-colored fatigues. His mother rested her head on John's shoulder, her eyes shut, her mouth open, as if she were dancing in her sleep. The presents waited under the squat, homely, tinsel-smothered tree. 3 big green dented tanks of Sevo Florane, decorated with crimson bows. His parents turned in their slow circle, and as they did, Bing saw that his father was wearing a gas mask, and his mother was naked. She really was asleep, too. Her feet dragged across the boards. His father clutched her around the waist, his gloved hands on the curve of her white buttocks. His mother's bare white can was as luminous as a celestial object, as pale as the moon. "Dad?" Bing asked. His father kept dancing, turning away, and taking Bing's mother with him. "Come on down, Bing!" cried a deep, booming voice, a voice so loud that the china chattered in the armoire. Bing lurched in surprise, his heart misfiring in his chest. The needle on the record jumped, came back down close to the end of the song. "Come on down! Looks like Christmas came early this year, doesn't it? Ho, ho, ho!" A part of Bing wanted to run back to his room and slam the door. He wanted to cover his eyes and his ears at the same time, but couldn't find the willpower to do either. He quailed at the thought of taking another step, yet his feet carried him forward, past the tree and the tanks of Sevo Florane, past his mother and father, down the hall, and to the front door. It swung open even before he put his hand on the knob. The foil flowers in his yard spun softly in the winter night. He had one foil flower for every year he had worked at Norchem Farm. Gifts for the custodial staff, bestowed at the annual holiday party. Christmasland waited beyond the yard. The sleigh coaster rumbled and crashed, and the children in the cart screamed and lifted their hands to the frozen night. The great Ferris wheel, the Arctic Eye, revolved against a backdrop of unfamiliar stars. All the candles were lit in a Christmas tree as tall as a 10-story building and as wide across as Bing's own house. "Merry goddamn Christmas, Bing, you crazy thing!" hollered that great booming voice. And when Bing looked into the sky, he saw that the moon had a face. A single bulging, bloodshot eye gaped from that starved skull face, a landscape of crater and bone. It grinned. "Bing, you crazy motherfucker! Are you ready for the ride of your life?" Bing sat up in bed, his heart pistoning in his chest, waking for real this time. He was so slicked with sweat that his G.I. Joe pajamas were sticking to his skin. He noticed distantly that his cock was so hard it hurt, poking through the front of his pants. He gasped as if he had not awoken but surfaced, after a long time underwater. His room was full of the cool, pale, bone-colored light of a faceless moon. Bing had been swallowing air for almost half a minute before he realized he could still hear White Christmas. The song had followed him right out of his dream. It came from a long way off and seemed to be getting fainter by the moment, and he knew if he didn't get up to look, it would soon be gone, and tomorrow he would believe he had imagined it. He rose and walked on unsteady legs to the window for a look into the yard. An old car at the end of the block was easing away. A black Rolls-Royce with sideboards and chrome fixtures. Its taillights flashed red in the night and illuminated the license plate. NOS 4A2. Then it turned the corner and disappeared, taking the joyful noise of Christmas with it. Norchem Farm. Bing knew that the man from Christmasland was coming, well before Charlie Manx showed up to ask Bing to take a ride with him. He knew, too, that the man from Christmasland would not be a man like other men, and that a job with Christmasland Security would not be a job like other jobs, and on these matters he was not disappointed. He knew because of the dreams, which seemed to him more vivid and real than anything that ever happened to him in the course of his waking life. He could never step into Christmasland in these dreams, but he could see it out his windows and out his door. He could smell the peppermint and cocoa, and he could see the candles burning in the 10-story Christmas tree, and he could hear the carts bashing and crashing on the sprawling old wooden sleigh coaster. He could hear the music, too, and how the children screamed. If you didn't know better, you would think they were being butchered alive. He knew because of the dreams, but also because of the car. The next time he saw it, he was at work, out on the loading dock. Some kids had tagged the back of the building, had spray-painted a big black cock and balls, spewing black jizz on a pair of great red globes that might have been boobs but that looked to Bing's eye like Christmas ornaments. Bing was outside in his rubber hazmat suit and industrial gas mask with a bucket of diluted lye to peel the paint off the wall with a wire brush. Bing loved working with lye, loved to watch it melt the paint away. Dennis Lurie, the autistic kid who worked the morning shift, said you could use lye to melt a human person down to grease. Dennis Lurie and Bing had put a dead bat in a bucket of lye and left it one day, and the next morning there had been nothing in there but fake-looking semi-transparent bones. He stepped back to admire his work. The balls had mostly vanished to reveal the raw red brick beneath. Only the big black prick and the boobs remained. As he stared at the wall, he saw, all of a sudden, his shadow appear, crisp, sharply delineated against the rough brick. He turned on his heel to look behind him, and the black Rolls was there. It was parked on the other side of the chain-link fence, its high, close-set headlights glaring at him. You could look at birds all your life without ever knowing what was a sparrow and what was a blackbird, but we all know a swan when we see it. So it was with cars. Maybe you could not tell a Firebird from a Fiero, but when you saw a Rolls-Royce, you knew it. Bing smiled to see it and felt his heart fill with a rush of blood, and he thought, now he will open the door and he will say, are you the young man, Bing Partridge, who wrote about a job at Christmasland? And my life will begin. My life will begin at last. The door did not open, though. Not then. The man behind the wheel, Bing could not see his face past the brilliance of the headlights, did not call out or roll down his window. He flashed his high beams, though, in genial greeting, before turning the car in a wide circle to point it away from the Norchem Farm building. Bing removed his gas mask, put it under his arm. He was flushed, and the cool, shady air was pleasant on his exposed skin. Bing could hear Christmas music trickling from the car. Joy to the world. Yes, he felt that way exactly. He wondered if the man behind the wheel wanted him to come. To leave his mask, leave his bucket of lye, slip around the fence, and climb into the passenger seat. But no sooner had he taken a step forward than the car began to ease away up the road. Wait! Bing cried. Don't go! Wait! The sight of the Rolls leaving him, of that license plate, NOS 4A2, shrinking steadily as the car glided away, shocked him. In a state of dizzy, almost panicked excitement, Bing screamed, I seen it!
I've seen Christmas Land. Please, give me a chance. Please, come back.
The brake lights flashed. The roll slowed for a moment, as if Bing had been heard, and then glided on.
Give me a chance, he shouted, then screaming, just give me a chance.
The roll slid away down the road, turned the corner, and was gone. Left Bing flushed and damp with sweat and his heart clapping in his chest. He was still standing there when the foreman, Mr. Paladin, stepped out on the loading dock for a smoke.
Hey, Bing, there's still quite a bit of cock on this wall, he called. You working this morning or are you on vacation?
Bing stared forlornly down the road.
Christmas vacation, he said,
but in a low voice so Mr. Paladin couldn't hear him. He had not seen the rolls in a week when they changed his schedule and he had to pull a double at Nor Chem Farm, 6 to 6. It was ungodly hot in the storeroom, so hot that the iron tanks of compressed gas would sear you if you brushed up against them. Bing caught his usual bus home, a 40-minute ride, the vents blowing stinky air and an infant squalling the whole way. He got off on Fairfield Street and walked the last 3 blocks. The air was no longer gas, but liquid, a liquid close to boiling. It streamed up off the softening blacktop and filled the air with distortion, so that the line of houses at the end of the block wavered like reflections bobbing in a pool of unsteady water.
Heat, heat, go away, Bing sang to himself. Boil me some other.
The roll sat across the street, in front of his house. The man behind the wheel leaned out of the right-hand window and twisted his head to look back at Bing and smiled, one old friend to another. He motioned with a long-fingered hand.
Hurry up now.
Bing's own hand shot into the air helplessly in a nervous return wave, and he came on down the street in a jiggling fat man's jog. It rattled him in some way to find the rolls idling there. A part of him had believed that eventually the man from Christmasland would come for him. Another part, however, had begun to worry that the dreams and his occasional sightings of the car were like crows circling over something sick and close to collapse, his mind. Every step he took toward NOS-4A2, he was that much more certain it would begin to move, to sail away and vanish yet again. It didn't. The man in the passenger seat was not sitting in the passenger seat at all, because of course the Rolls-Royce was an old English car, and the steering wheel was on the right-hand side. This man, the driver, smiled benevolently upon Bing Partridge. At first glance, Bing knew that although this man might have passed for 40 or so, he was much older than that. His eyes had the soft, faded look of sea glass. They were old eyes, unfathomably old. He had a long, harrowed face, wise and kindly, although he had an overbite and his teeth were a little crooked. It was the sort of face, Bing supposed, that some people would describe as ferret-like. But in profile, it also would have looked just fine on currency.
"Here he is," cried the man behind the wheel. "It is the eager young Bing Partridge, the man of the hour. We are overdue for a conversation, young Partridge. The most important conversation of your life, I'll bet."
"Are you from Christmasland?" Bing asked in a hushed voice.
The old, or maybe ageless, man laid a finger to one side of his nose.
"Charles Talent Manx III at your service, my dear. CEO of Christmasland Enterprises, Director of Christmasland Entertainment, President of Fun. Also His Eminence, the King Shit of Turd Hill, although it doesn't say that on my card."
His fingers snapped and produced a card out of thin air. Bing took it and looked down at it. It was plain and white and depicted a pair of crossed candy canes, and beneath them one word.
"Charlie." "You can taste those candy canes if you lick the card," Charlie said.
Bing stared for a moment, then lapped his rough tongue across the card. It tasted of paper and pasteboard.
"Kidding!" Charlie cried and socked Bing in the arm. "Who do you think I am, Willy Wonka? Come around. Get in." Why, son, you look like you are about to melt into a puddle of Bing juice. Let me take you for a bottle of pop. We have something important to discuss.
A job? Bing asked.
A future,
Charlie said. Highway 322.
This is the nicest car I have ever been in, Bing Partridge said when they were gliding along Route 322, the rolls riding the curves like a stainless steel ball bearing in a groove.
It is a 1938 Rolls-Royce Wraith, one of just 400 made in Bristol, England. A rare find. Just like you, Bing Partridge.
Bing moved his hand across the pebbled leather. The polished cherry dash and the gear shifts glowed.
Does your license plate mean something? Bing asked.
N-O-S-4-A-2?
Nosferatu,
the man Charlie Mank said.
Nos for what, who?
Mank said.
It is one of my little jokes. My first wife once accused me of being a Nosferatu. She did not use that exact word, but close enough. Have you ever had poison ivy, Bing?
Not in a long time. When I was little, before my father died, he took me camping, and I...
If he took you camping after he died, my boy, then you would have a story to tell. Here is my point. My first wife was like the rash you get from poison ivy. I couldn't stand her, but I couldn't keep my hands off her. She was an itch I scratched until I bled. And then I scratched it some more. Your work sounds dangerous, Mr. Partridge.
The transition was so abrupt that Bing wasn't ready for it, needed a moment to register that it was his turn to talk.
It does? You mentioned in your letter your work with compressed gases, Mac said. Aren't tanks of helium and oxygen highly explosive?
Oh, sure. A guy in the loading bay snuck a smoke a few years ago, next to a tank of nitrogen with an open valve. It made a big shriek and went off like a rocket. It hit the fire door hard enough to smash it off its hinges, and the fire door is made of iron. No one died that time, though. And my crew has been accident-free for as long as I've been head man. Well, almost accident-free anyway. Dennis Lurie huffed some gingerbread smoke once, but that doesn't really count. He didn't even get sick.
Gingerbread smoke?
That's a flavored mix of sevoflurane that we send to dentist's offices. You can also get it unscented, but the little guys like the old gingerbread smoke.
Oh, it's a narcotic.
It makes it so you don't know what's happening to you, yeah, but it doesn't put you to sleep. It's more like you only know what you're told, and you lose all your intuitions.
Bing laughed a little, couldn't help himself, then said almost apologetically,
We told Dennis it was disco time, and he started humping the air like John Travolta in that movie. We just about died.
Mr. Manx's mouth opened to show his little brown teeth in a homely and irresistible grin.
I like a man with a sense of humor, Mr. Partridge.
You can call me Bing, Mr. Manx.
He waited for Mr. Manx to say it was all right to call him Charlie, but Mr. Manx didn't. Instead, he said,
I imagine most of the people who danced to disco music were under the influence of some kind of drugs. It is the only explanation for it. Not that I would call such silly wiggling a form of dance. More like rank foolishness.
The Wraith rolled into the dirt lot of the Franklin Dairy Queen. On blacktop, the Wraith seemed to glide like a sailboat with the wind behind it. There was a sense of effortless, silent motion. On dirt, Bing had a different impression, a feeling of mass and momentum and weight, a panzer grinding the clay under its treads.
How about I buy us Coca-Colas and we will get down to brass tacks,
Charlie Mack said. He turned sideways, one gangly arm hung over the wheel. Bing opened his mouth to answer, only to find himself struggling against a yawn. The long, peaceful, rocking ride in the late day sun had made him drowsy. He had not slept well in a month and had been up since 4 a.m., and if Charlie Manx had not turned up parked across from his house, he would have made himself a TV dinner and gone to bed early, which reminded him.
I dreamed about it, Bing said simply. I dream about Christmas land all the time.
He laughed, embarrassed. Charlie Manx would think him quite the fool. Only Charlie Manx didn't. His smile widened.
Did you dream about the moon? Did the moon speak to you?
Bing's breath was pushed out of him all at once. He stared at Manx in wonder and possibly just a little alarm.
You dreamt about it because you belong there, Bing, Manx said. But if you want to go, you'll have to earn it. And I can tell you how.
Mr. Manx was back from the takeout window a couple of minutes later. He eased his lanky frame in behind the wheel and passed Bing a chill, sweating bottle of Coca-Cola, audibly fizzing. Bing thought he had never seen a bottle of anything look so good. He tipped back his head and poured the Coca-Cola down, swallowing rapidly, one gulp, two, three. When he lowered the bottle, it was half gone. He inhaled deeply and then burped, a sharp, raggedy sound, loud as someone tearing a bedsheet. Bing's face burned, but Charlie Manx only laughed gaily and said, "Better in than out. That's what I always tell my children. Ha, ha, ha." Bing relaxed and smiled shamefacedly. His burp had tasted bad, like Coca-Cola, but also weirdly of aspirin. Manx spun the wheel and carried them out onto the road.
You've been watching me, Bing said. Yes, I have, Charlie said. Almost ever since I opened your letter. I was quite surprised to receive it, I admit. I have not had any responses to my old magazine ads in many a season. Still, I had a hunch, as soon as I read your letter, that you were one of my people. Someone who would understand from the get-go the important work I'm doing. Still, a hunch is good, but knowing is better. Christmasland is a special place, and many people would have reservations about the work I do for it. I am very selective about who I employ. As it happens, I am looking for a man who can act as my new head of security. I need a hum-hum-hum-hum to hum-hum-hum.
It took Bing a long minute to realize he hadn't heard the last part of what Charlie Manx was saying. The sound of his words had gotten lost in the drone of the tires on the blacktop. They were off the highway now, slipping along under the firs through cool, piney shade. When Bing caught a glimpse of the rosy sky, the sun had slipped down when he wasn't paying attention, and sunset had come. He saw the moon, as white as a lemon ice, drifting in the clear empty.
"What did you say?" Bing asked,
forcing himself to sit up a little straighter and rapidly blinking his eyes. He was dully aware that he was in danger of nodding off. His Coke, with its caffeine and sugar and refreshing fizz, should have woken him up but seemed to have had the opposite effect. He took a last swallow, but the residue at the bottom of the bottle was bitter, and he made a face.
"The world is full of brutal, stupid people, Bing," Charlie said. "And you know the worst of it? Some of them have children. Some of them get drunk and hit their little ones. Hit them and call them names. Such folk are unfit for children. That's how I see it. You could line them up and put a bullet in all of them. That would suit me fine. A bullet in the brain for each of them. Or a nail."
Bing felt his insides turn upside down. He felt unsteady. So unsteady he had to put a hand on the dash to keep from tipping over. "I don't remember doing it," Bing lied, his voice hushed and trembling just slightly. "It was a long time ago." Then he said, "I'd give anything to take it back."
"Why? So your father could have had a chance to kill you instead? The paper said before you shot him, he hit you so hard you suffered a cranial fracture. The paper said you were covered in bruises, some of them days old. I hope I do not have to explain to you the difference between homicide and fighting for your life." "I hurt my mom, too," Bing whispered. "In the kitchen. She didn't do anything to me."
Mr. Manx didn't seem impressed by this point.
"Where was she when your father was giving you the old one, too? I take it she did not heroically attempt to shield you with her body. How come she never called the police? Couldn't find the number in the phone book?"
Manx exhaled a weary sigh.
"I wish someone had been there for you, Bing. The fires of hell are not hot enough for a man, or woman, who would hurt his children. But really, I am less concerned with punishment than prevention. It would have been best if it simply had never happened to you at all. If your home had been a safe one. If every day had been Christmas for you, Bing, instead of every day being misery and woe, I think we can both agree on that.
Bing stared at him with woolly eyes. He felt as if he had not slept in days, and it was a minute-by-minute struggle to keep from sinking back into his leather seat and slipping away into unconsciousness.
I think I'm going to fall asleep, Bing said.
That's all right, Bing, Charlie said. The road to Christmas Land is paved in dreams.
White blossoms drifted down from somewhere, flicked across the windshield. Bing stared at them with dim pleasure. He felt warm and good and peaceful, and he liked Charlie Manx.
The fires of hell are not hot enough for a man or a woman who would hurt his children.
It was a fine thing to say. It rang with moral certainty. Charlie Manx was a man who knew what was what.
Hum, 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 Charlie Manx said.
Bing nodded. This statement also rang with moral certainty and wisdom, and then he pointed at the blossoms raining down onto the windscreen.
It's snowing.
Ha! Charlie Manx said. That is not snow. Rest your eyes, Bing Partridge. Rest your eyes, and you will see something.
Bing Partridge did as he was told. His eyes were not closed long, only a single moment. But it was a moment that seemed to go on and on, to stretch out into a peaceful eternity, a restful sleeping darkness in which the only sound was the thrum of the tires on the road. Bing exhaled, Bing inhaled. Bing opened his eyes and then jolted upright, staring out through the windshield at the road to Christmas Land. The day had fled, and the headlights of the Wraith bored into a frozen darkness. White flecks raced through the glare, ticked softly against the windshield.
Now this is snow, Charlie Manx cried from behind the steering wheel.
Bing had snapped from drowsiness to full wakefulness in a moment, as if consciousness were a switch and someone had flicked it on. His blood seemed to surge all at once toward his heart. He could not have been more shocked if he'd woken to find a grenade in his lap. Half the sky was smothered over with clouds, but the other half was plentifully sugared with stars, and the moon hung among them, that moon with the hooked nose and broad, smiling mouth. It considered the road below with a yellow sliver of eye showing beneath one drooping lid. Deformed firs lined the road. Bing had to look twice before he realized they were not pines at all, but gumdrop trees.
Christmas Land, Bing whispered. No,
Charlie Manx said.
We are a long way off, 20 hours of driving at least. But it's out there. It's in the west. And once a year, Bing, I take someone there.
Me?
Bing asked in a quavering voice.
No, Bing, Charlie said gently. Not this year. All children are welcome in Christmas Land, but grown-ups are a different case. You must prove your worth first. You must prove your love of children and your devotion to protecting them and serving Christmas Land.
They passed a snowman who lifted a twig arm and waved. Bing reflexively lifted his hand to wave in return.
How? He whispered.
You must save 10 children with me, Bing. You must save them from monsters.
Monsters? What monsters?
Their parents, Manx said solemnly.
Bing removed his face from the icy glass of the passenger window and looked around at Charlie Manx. When he had shut his eyes a moment earlier, there had been sunlight in the sky, and Mr. Manx had been dressed in a plain white shirt and suspenders. Now, though, he had on a coat with tails and a dark cap with a black leather brim. The coat had a double line of brass buttons and seemed like the sort of thing an officer from a foreign country might wear, a lieutenant in a royal guard. When Bing glanced down at himself, he saw he also wore new clothes, his father's crisp white marine dress uniform, boots polished to a black shine.
Am I dreaming? Bing asked.
I told you, Manx said. The road to Christmas Land is paved in dreams. This old car can slip right out of the everyday world and onto the secret roads of thought. Sleep is just the exit ramp. When a passenger dozes off, my Wraith leaves whatever road it was on and slides onto the St. Nick Parkway. We are sharing this dream together. It is your dream, Bing, but it is still my ride. Come, I want to show you something.
As he had been speaking, the car was slowing and easing toward the side of the road. Snow crunched under the tires. The headlights illuminated a figure just up the road on the right. From a distance, it looked like a woman in a white gown. She stood very still, did not glance into the lights of the wraith. Max leaned over and popped the glove compartment above Bing's knees. Inside was the usual mess of road maps and papers. Bing also saw a flashlight with a long chrome handle. An orange medicine bottle rolled out of the glove compartment. Bing caught it one-handed. It said, Handsome, Dewey, Valium, 50 milligrams. Manx gripped the flashlight, straightened up, and opened his door a crack.
We have to walk from here.
Bing held up the bottle.
Did you give me something to make me sleep, Mr. Manx?
Manx winked.
Don't hold it against me, Bing. I knew you'd want to get on the road to Christmasland as soon as possible, and that you could see it only when you were asleep. I hope it's all right.
Bing said, I guess I don't mind, and shrugged. He looked at the bottle again.
Who is Dewey Handsome? He was you, Bing. He was my pre-Bing thing. Dewey Handsome was a screen agent in Los Angeles who specialized in child actors. He helped me save 10 children and earned his place in Christmasland. Oh, the children of Christmasland loved Dewey Bing. They absolutely ate him up. Come along.
Bing unlatched his door and climbed out into the still, frozen air. The night was windless and the snow spun down in slow flakes, kissing his cheeks. For an old man, why do I keep thinking he's old? Bing wondered. He doesn't look old. Charles Manx was spry, legging ahead along the side of the road, his boots squealing. Bing tramped after him, hugging himself in his thin dress uniform. It wasn't one woman in a white gown, but two. Flanking a black iron gate, they were identical, ladies carved from glassy marble. They both leaned forward, spreading their arms, and their flowing bone-white dresses billowed behind them, opening like the wings of angels. They were serenely beautiful, with the full mouths and blind eyes of classical statuary. Their lips were parted, so they appeared to be in mid-gasp, lips turned up in a way that suggested they were about to laugh or cry out in pain. Their sculptor had fashioned them so their breasts were pressing against the fabric of their gowns. Manx passed through the black gate between the ladies. Bing hesitated, and his right hand came up, and he stroked the top of one of those smooth, cold bosoms. He had always wanted to touch a breast that looked like that, a firm, full mommy breast. The stone lady's smile widened, and Bing leaped back, a cry rising in his throat.
Come along, Bing. Let's be about our business. You aren't dressed for this cold, Manx shouted.
Bing was about to step forward, then hesitated to look at the arch over the open iron gate. Graveyard of what might be. Bing frowned at this mystifying statement, but then Mr. Manx called again, and he hurried along. Four stone steps, lightly sprinkled in snow, led down to a flat plain of black ice. The ice was grainy with the recent snowfall, but the flakes were not deep. Any kick of the boot would reveal the smooth sheet of ice beneath. He had gone two steps when he saw something cloudy caught in the ice, about 3 inches below the surface. At first glance, it looked like a dinner plate. Bing bent and looked through the ice. Charlie Manx, who was only a few paces ahead, turned back and pointed the flashlight at the spot where he was looking. The glow of the beam lit the face of a child. A girl with freckles on her cheeks and her hair in pigtails. At the sight of her, Bing screamed and took an unsteady step back. She was as pale as the marble statues guarding the entrance to the graveyard of what might be, but she was flesh, not stone. Her mouth was open in a silent shout, a few frozen bubbles drifting from her lips. Her hands were raised as if she were reaching up to him. In one was a bunch of red coiled rope, a jump rope, Bing recognized.
It's a girl, he cried. It's a dead girl in the ice.
Not dead, Bing, Manx said. Not yet. Maybe not for years.
Manx flicked the flashlight away and pointed it toward a white stone cross, tilting up from the ice. Lily Carter, 15 Fox Road, Sharpsville, Pennsylvania, 1980-? Turned to a life of sin by her mother, her childhood ended before it began. If only there had been another to take her off to Christmas land. Manx swept his light around what Bing now perceived was a frozen lake, on which were ranked rows of crosses, a cemetery the size of Arlington. The snow swirled around the memorials, the plinths, the emptiness. In the moonlight, the snowflakes looked like silver shavings. Bing peered again at the girl at his feet. She stared up through the clouded ice and blinked. He screamed once more, stumbling away. The backs of his legs struck another cross, and he half-spun, lost his footing, and went down on all fours. He gazed through the dull ice. Manx turned his flashlight on the face of another child, a boy with sensitive, thoughtful eyes beneath pale bangs. William Delman, 42B Madison Avenue, Asbury Park, New Jersey, 1981-? Billy only ever wanted to play, but his father didn't stay. His mother ran away. Drugs, knives, grief, and dismay. If only someone had saved the day. Bing tried to get up, did a comical soft shoe, went down again, a little to the left. The ray of Manx's flashlight showed him another child, an Asian girl, clutching a stuffed bear in a tweed jacket. Sarah Cho, 1983-? 39 Fifth Street, Bangor, Maine. Sarah lives in a tragic dream, will hang herself by age 13. But think how she will give such thanks if she goes for a ride with Charlie Manx. Bing made a gobbling, gasping sound of horror. The girl, Sarah Cho, stared up at him, mouth open in a silent cry. She had been buried in the ice with a clothesline twisted around her throat. Charlie Manx caught Bing's elbow and helped him up.
"I'm sorry you had to see all this, Bing," Manx said. "I wish I could have spared you, but you needed to understand the reasons for my work. Come back to the car. I have a thermos of cocoa."
Mr. Manx helped Bing across the ice, his hand squeezing Bing's upper arm tightly to keep him from falling again. They separated at the hood of the car, and Charlie went on to the driver's side door, but Bing hesitated for an instant, noticing for the first time the hood ornament. A grinning lady fashioned from chrome, her arms spread so that her gown flowed back from her body, like wings. He recognized her in a glance. She was identical to the angels of mercy who guarded the gate of the cemetery. When they were in the car, Charlie Manx reached beneath his seat and came up with a silver thermos. He removed the cap, filled it with hot chocolate, and handed it over. Bing clasped it in both hands, sipping at that scalding sweetness, while Charlie Manx made a wide, sweeping turn away from the graveyard of what might be. They accelerated back the way they had come. "Tell me about Christmas land," Bing said in a shaking voice.
"It is the best place," Manx said. "With all due respect to Mr. Walt Disney, Christmas land is the true happiest place in the world. Although, from another point of view, I suppose you could say it is the happiest place not in this world. In Christmas land, every day is Christmas, and the children there never feel anything like unhappiness. No, the children there don't even understand the concept of unhappiness. There is only fun. It is like heaven. Only, of course, they are not dead. They live forever, remain children for eternity, and are never forced to struggle and sweat and demean themselves like us poor adults. I discovered this place of pure dream many years ago, and the first wee ones to take up residence there were my own children, who were saved before they could be destroyed by the pitiful, angry thing their mother became in her later years. It is truly a place where the impossible happens every day. But it is a place for children, not adults. Only a few grown-ups are allowed to live there. Only those who have shown devotion to a higher cause. Only those who are willing to sacrifice everything for the well-being and happiness of the tender little ones. People like you, Bing. I wish with all my heart that all the children in the world could find their way to Christmas Land, where they would know safety and happiness beyond measure. Oh, boy, that would be something. But few adults would consent to send their children away with a man they have never met to a place they cannot visit. Why, they would think me the most heinous sort of kidnapper and kiddie fiddler. So, I bring only one or two children a year, and they are always children I have seen in the graveyard of what might be. Good children sure to suffer at the hands of their own parents. As a man who was hurt terribly as a child himself, you understand, I'm sure, how important it is to help them. The graveyard shows me children who will, if I do nothing, have their childhood stolen by their mothers and fathers. They will be hit with chains, fed cat food, sold to perverts. Their souls will turn to ice, and they will become cold, unfeeling people, sure to destroy children themselves. We are their one chance, Bing. In my years as the Keeper of Christmas Land, I have saved some 70 children, and it is my feverish wish to save 100 more before I am done. The car rushed through the cold, cavernous dark. Bing moved his lips, counting to himself. 70, he murmured. I thought you only rescue one child a year, maybe two. Yes, Mag said. That is about right. But how old are you? Bing asked. Max grinned sidelong at him, revealing that crowded mouthful of sharp brown teeth. My work keeps me young. Finish your cocoa, Bing. Bing swallowed the last hot, sugary mouthful, then swirled the remnants. There was a milky yellow residue there. He wondered if he had just swallowed something else from the medicine cabinet of Dewey Handsome, a name that sounded like a joke or a name in a limerick. Dewey Handsome, Charlie Manx's pre-Bing thing, who had saved 10 children and gone to his eternal reward in Christmas Land. If Charlie Manx had saved 70 kids, then there had been, what, 7 pre-Bing things? The lucky dogs. He heard a rumbling, the crash, rattle, and 12-cylinder whine of a big truck coming up behind them. He looked back. The sound was rising in volume with each passing moment, but could see nothing. Did you hear that? Bing asked, unaware that the empty lid of the thermos had slipped from his suddenly tingling fingers. Do you hear something coming? That would be the morning, Max said, pulling up on us fast. Don't look now, Bing. Here it comes. That truck roar built and built, and suddenly it was pulling by them on Bing's left. Bing looked out into the night and could see the side of a big panel truck quite clearly, only a foot or two away. Painted on the side was a green field, a red farmhouse, a scattering of cows, and a bright smiling sun coming up over the hills. The rays of that rising sun lit foot-high lettering, Sunrise Delivery. For an instant the truck obscured the land and sky, and Sunrise Delivery filled Bing's entire visual field. Then it rolled rattling on, dragging a rooster tail of dust, and Bing flinched from an almost painfully blue morning sky, a sky without cloud, without limit, and squinted into the Pennsylvania countryside. Charlie Manx rolled the Wraith to the side of the road and put it into park, cracked, sandy country road, yellowing weeds growing right up to the side of the car, insect hum, glare of a low sun. It could not be much later than 7 in the morning, but already Bing could feel the fierce heat of the day coming through the windshield. Wowzer, Bing said. What happened? The sun came up, Max said mildly.
I've been asleep? Bing asked.
I think really, Bing, you've been awake. Maybe for the first time in your life.
Max smiled, and Bing blushed and offered up an uncertain smile in return. He didn't always understand Charles Max, but that only made the man easier to adore, to worship. Dragonflies floated in the high weeds. Bing didn't recognize where they were. It wasn't Sugar Creek. Some back lane somewhere. When he looked out his passenger window in the hazy golden light, he saw a colonial with black shutters on a hill. A girl in a crimson shift-like flower print dress stood in the dirt driveway, under a locust tree, staring down at them. In one hand she held a jump rope. But she wasn't leaping, wasn't using it, was just studying them in a quizzical sort of way. Bing supposed she hadn't ever seen a Rolls-Royce before. He narrowed his eyes, staring back at her, lifting one hand in a little wave. She didn't wave back, only tipped her head to the side.